This is Without Compromise, a show that explores what happens when you won't settle for anything less than your crazy ideas. We'll talk to athletes, founders, adventurers, and entrepreneurs of all kinds about living without compromise. I'm your host, Mason Gravely. Welcome to the show.
We're programmed for survival, so our instinct is to give up on these situations, to move away from them.
I thought if I didn't sign up for that race, that I was just going to disappear.
It doesn't have to be these big, huge things that everyone thinks you need to do to make a difference.
If you haven't heard, Athletic Brewing has a new film out. It's a documentary about three of our ambassadors as they train for Ironman in Lake Placid. However, it's about so much more than training for a race. As we're going to hear in Timmy's story today, he is one of those three athletes that we had on what's called Team Athletic, a group of 11 to 12 ambassadors that raced at each of our title Ironman races, which are Lake Placid and Oceanside. If you don't know, we have another film called Journey to 100 that came out a couple years ago, and we've been looking for that next film idea. And it, you know, after a couple years of doing this Team Athletic thing, it was just so obvious, like, wow, there's so many great stories. These are people directly in our community. Let's grab a camera and point it to a few of these stories and tell them. Well, that all came into fruition last summer at Ironman Lake Placid. And Timmy here is one of those three stories we decided to highlight. What's amazing is that, you know, this is true for, I mean, anybody, really. They have so much more to their story than you think they do. When you talk to anyone, that's what I've learned through doing over 1,000 podcast interviews, is that everyone does have a story if you're willing to sit down and listen, and if they're willing to tell it. And Timmy's story is going to blow you away. I mean, we're going to try to not reveal too much, because I want you to go check out the film. The trailer is linked in the show notes. And it's going to give you goosebumps. It's a beautiful story, an amazing film. We worked with Portside Productions, and Cole Heilborn and the team did a phenomenal job. And we can't wait to bring this story to the world. So our very first screening, our premiere, is actually tonight in Oceanside, California. Oceanside Ironman 70.3 is Saturday, tomorrow. So tonight we are doing it. If you are around, please come by. If you say, hey, I heard about it on the podcast, check for tickets, buy a ticket. But I'd be happy to give away a couple tickets to someone that heard it right here on the show. I know that's incredibly short timing. And we will be having other screenings later in the month and the next month. And then there will be a chance to watch it online on YouTube in early June. So there will be a chance to watch it if you can't watch the premiere, of course. So we wanted to highlight Timmy, share a little bit about the story, get you a little more familiar with what this story is going to be about. There are two other athletes that are featured in the film as well. You might remember we featured Lynn Rogers on the podcast late 2022, so about a year and a half ago now. She is one of the other stories in the film. So share far and wide, tell people about it, watch the trailer, get inspired, grab an athletic, and let's go on this journey. Well, folks, you heard a little bit about Timmy Hot Dog Howard. What's cool, Timmy, if you ever do like a thru hike or something of like that place, you already have a trail name, which is just Hot Dog.
Oh, yeah.
Hot Dog Howard. So you like, it's ready to go. Nicknames, brand, like it's just ready. Well, I want to get to where the hot dog came from, but first I want to just hear from you. How you doing?
Doing good, doing good. It's funny because I've always wanted to hike the Appalachian Trail, and that would be an awesome thing. So yeah. I already got the nickname. I'm good to go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, usually the trail name, I mean, they say it's supposed to be given to you, but come on, I know half the people I know that have done it, well, they're out there alone, so nobody's like giving them a name, so they got to make it up themselves anyway. So they're like, well, I haven't seen anybody in 2 months. You know, what do I do? Just wait on somebody to give me a name. Well, how are you doing post-surgery? Tell us about what was that for? And yeah, I mean, it was a big deal.
So post-surgery, I'm doing really well. So I had a lot of issues going on during the Ironman training, basically with my GI. I have what's called a hiatal hernia. So my stomach is going up through my diaphragm. And that created a lot of issues when you're hunched over on the bike or when you're swimming because you're rotating your torso a lot. So I spent a lot of time actually vomiting during training, vomiting during the race, which is tough because you have to be able to hold down all the fluids. So when I finished the race, I finally decided to get it taken care of. So it took me about 6 months to get into the doctor, and then they went in, repaired everything, and symptoms have been way better since. No vomiting, no anything like that. I'm allowed to run in a straight line, according to the doctor. No side to side.
Really?
But I'm 2 weeks out of surgery, and he said I could run straight. So that's what I'm doing. I'm just running straight right now.
Treadmill, I guess, because a straight line
treadmill
in the real world can be difficult too.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, he knows I'm an endurance athlete. He knows I love trail running. So he's like, absolutely no trail running.
Okay. Yeah.
And funny story, I asked him if I could do Ironman Oceanside. He looked at me and just said, absolutely not. You're insane. So that got nixed real quick. I've got about a 3 to 4 month recovery, and then I'm looking to do something this fall. So I'll be back to it before you know it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what do you miss the most right now?
Really kind of the structure of training, and then training with friends. All my friends, it's the weather's starting to break here in Indiana. So they're all going for these rides and stuff. And I can't get on a bike for 3 months. So it's like, I asked one of my buddies to attach a sidecar to his bike just to pull me around.
Just get one of those, the kid carts in the back.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, the two-seater, I think you could probably curl up in the back there. I mean, it's pretty spacious. That's wild, man. Well, actually, I was asking about food. What food do you miss? Because I know you're on a liquid diet.
Oh, food. Yeah, food. Oh, food. Oh, well, absolutely. Hot dogs. And pretty much just everything. So I am so tired of liquid and puree. But it's okay. It's like a temporary problem to a permanent solution. So it's fine.
Dude, that's a quote right there. I mean, I know that's probably been said before, but I like that. Temporary problem to a permanent solution. Needs to be on a poster in an office somewhere.
We're opening deep here.
Yes, absolutely. Well, man, you know, we have a film that's coming out, and it's on tour as we, you know, when this comes out. Take us through that experience. What was that experience like? Because I know from our point of view, the reason we wanted to focus on Team Athletic, which trains for Ironmans every year. Well, man, you know, the first few years of Team Athletic, we were like, there's so many good stories in this group. You know, you get 12 people together from all walks of life in different parts of the country to train for something so challenging. We were, the first 2 years we did it, we were like, why is there not a camera pointed towards somebody in this group? Because there's so many cool things coming out of it. Well, we finally did it. And your story was one that we focused on. And I don't know, talk to us about the experience. You know, what was it like to have your, you know, to open up like that?
Yeah. So, I mean, the experience with the filming was, it was amazing. So it was almost like therapy in a way. I got to really dive deep and unlock some things that I had kind of just pushed to the side and forgot about while we were doing the filming. Because, you know, I mean, the film may be only, you know, however long it is, pretty short. But I mean, we would sit down and do interviews for 5 hours. So, I mean, we did a lot of talking and a lot of unpacking. And that was really good to basically bring up some of that stuff. And I've basically been an open book with my story since I got sober.
Have you always been like, is that hard to do, or that just kind of came natural for you?
No, I've just always been that way. Ever since I got sober, I've just kind of broadcasted it. Like, this is who I am. Either you like me or you don't, and that's okay. But maybe if my story helps one person, then it was worth it.
Yeah.
I've met some people that don't like my story, don't like my background, and that's fine. But I've met tons of people who reach out to me and say, hey, your story is inspiring. It helped me through this. Or I've had people reach out to me if their loved ones are struggling, and I can be kind of that person to help them through it. So I think being transparent with it has been the best part of the journey.
So, you know, yeah, you're very open. We go into your story. A lot of that was surprising because we obviously don't know everything about y'all when you're on the team, or even when you like agree to be a part of it. You know, there's a lot of uncovering that goes on. And I sense from the film crew too, they were like, holy cow, you know, Tim's story is, there's a lot to it. And honestly, man, part of the challenge was trying to fit the stories in, because we decided with three, and then it's like we all realized, wow, everybody basically has a lot more we could talk about. They could be their own story. What's something that maybe didn't make the story or didn't make the cut, or you didn't get to talk about? Is there anything that's like, you know what, if I filmed again, I'd mention that, or if it was longer, I'd mention that?
I think something that would be really neat to mention that we didn't really have time to dive to in the film was basically the rebuilding process. So I had lost all my family, all my friends throughout my years of addiction. You know, my relationship with my family was super rocky. And it, what's really cool was it took multiple years to build back those relationships. But getting back to a point now where we're all comfortable with where I was, who I am now, it took a lot of years of me proving myself because I had spent so many years proving people that I was going to do the wrong thing. So yeah. It's taken a lot of years to kind of rebuild that trust. And now I'm in a great place with all of my family. You know, I've get to see them much more often and we talk. So it's just, it's a really good side of life now.
Who do you look at as maybe for, as inspiration or a model that says that that person's doing it right? Did you have anybody you were looking at? Like, I want to be like this person, or was it, you know, here's what I want to get back to. So I'm just going to go make it happen.
Yeah, I didn't have really, I mean, I guess there was one person, but it was more of a group atmosphere. What really kind of changed things for me was when I had first gotten sober and I was still kind of homeless at the time. And I started going to that back on my feet that is highlighted in the film. And I met these individuals who I just came up, they gave me a hug, and they basically just accepted me for me without knowing any of my backstory. And they said, hey, we're here for you. And then I immediately started training with a friend of mine named Kelsey. And she was like, basically took me under her wing and just helped me train for my first marathon. But kind of watching those individuals that were volunteers for this organization train us and help us, I use them as role models. Like, okay, this is what I want my life to be. Like, I want to, you know, have a house, be able to give back. Giving back was a huge thing for me, but I wasn't in a position at that time to do it. So I just really looked up to them as role models.
You know, with a lot of people that have a difficult past, there's like a level of intensity that comes with getting through that, that, you know, I've got family that have gone through this, and they're just, you know, it almost seems like it takes that to stay on the straight and narrow, you know, or whatever that right yeah. path is. You don't seem to have that level, at least outwardly. Like, I don't take this the wrong way. Like, that level of like sheer grit of like, I 100% got to be intense about it all the time. I found it surprising you had that pass because I'm like, dang, he's so like laid back and goofy and just didn't seem to take yourself too serious. Do you sense that you have that difference, or is that just me?
The first 2 years of my sobriety, I was very intense. So, I mean, it's very safe to say that I had traded one addiction for another. I had traded, you know, the drugs for running, which it is a much healthier yeah. form of addiction. Yeah. Yeah. But when I say I was running, like most people, they say, oh, I want my first race to be a 5K. My first race was a marathon. I was like, I want to do harder and harder. And then I immediately went to the ultra marathons. But what happened through those years is I just kept getting hurt because I would run an obscene amount of miles, not eat enough food, not take care of myself. So I think over the years, I kind of learned like, oh, okay, I'm still human. Like, I have to check myself. So now I'm kind of to a place where I enjoy the training, but I do it with moderation. Like, I don't let it consume my life.
Yeah. The sobriety to ultra running pipeline is a real thing.
Yes. Oh, yeah. You see it all the time in books and movies and podcasts. I mean, there's so many of us that get into this sport that it's just, it's unbelievable.
It's great, though. Like, it's just such a better alternative to like point.
It's a much better.
Yeah, much better. It's cool, too. I mean, just think about, you know, putting that energy and intensity into a distance, into an activity like that. It's incredible and inspiring.
I think a lot of us, like I even highlighted on this in the film, like I think I spent so many years in pain and struggling with the addiction. Like, I try to get to a breaking point with these endurance sports, mm-hmm. and I haven't found it yet. So I haven't found the endurance sport where I'm like, you have to tap out, you can't do this.
Really?
Kind of use that as like a good push to say, you know, look what you're capable of.
Where do you think your limit would be? Like, is there something like, I'm not sure I could do that? Because, you know, full Ironman, you've done that. Ultra running, but is there a distance or a sport or something that you're like, I'm not sure I could do it?
I don't know. I mean, I think if I set my mind to it and properly train, I could probably do almost anything. But it's just, you know, having the right mindset. When I looked back, like when I first got sober, I would have never thought an Ironman was possible. But just having the proper training and doing the right things. I mean, it took years to get to that point. And ultimately one day I'd like to get in with some of these crazies who are doing the Moab 240 or, you know, some of the 140 mile ultra multiple day endurance races. Like, I think that would be a fun test. And I'm sure like there's definitely a breaking point out there. So
I would think we'll see. Well, what would you say when it came to making a change and deciding to make a change, and now looking back on the 6-7 years it's been, what would you say was some of those key elements that were in place for anybody else that wants to make a change? Like, what's something like, you have to have this, you have to have this, this so much is as important. Like, what were some of those things for you that helped make this possible?
Yeah, I think the key elements for me were, I hit my absolute rock bottom. And that's mentioned in the film, but I hit my absolute rock bottom and I was tired. I was tired for years, but that was kind of just my breaking point. And then finding help with getting off of the substances was a big deal too. What I was on, it's hard to just cold turkey it. So actually finding a medical detox was a big deal. And then surrounding myself with sobriety as well as community after the fact was massive for me. And now that's what I use, is I use my community around me. Friendships, it's volunteering, it's giving back to the local races. It's things that helped me back then to get sober. I'm able to give back and help those things now. And I think that's what keeps me sober.
Do you like want to do that? Or do you feel like this is a duty I have, or is it both?
No, I absolutely want to do that. That's what I feel my purpose is. I feel like through telling my story, I've been given a platform through a few different avenues. So I feel like I get to enjoy giving back. And like I said, being able to tell my story, if people can find some relation and possibly make the change out of it, I think that's kind of what I'm here for. And I said it in the documentary, I don't think it made it. But everyone that I associated with when I was out there doing drugs is now dead. I'm the only one that I was around that's still alive. So there's got to be a reason for that. And I don't take that lightly. So I just use that as fuel every day, because there's a reason that I'm here. There's a reason that my story gets out, and there's a reason that it helps people. So that's why I'll just keep telling it until, you know, I can't anymore.
Do you get tired of talking about it?
No, not really. It's like the light shined on you, and I don't always want to be that person, because I'm like, I'm just a normal guy. Like, if you and I were hanging out, like if we were paddling down in Florida, like, you know, it wouldn't be the normal thing that you and I bring up in conversation. It's just
maybe in Florida. No, <I'm just> kidding.
It's true. But yeah, no, I mean, it's not bad. I've come to the point where, like I said, I'm just an open book. So it's just something I don't mind spilling.
Do you remember acts of kindness that people showed you during that time? I mean, does anything stick out, or was it just really just all bad?
No. There was tons of acts of kindness. A lot of the times I slept under a bridge and it gets very cold, in Ohio and Indiana. I spent, you know, multiple years in each state. It gets very cold, but I would have people stop and give me, you know, sleeping bags, blankets, pillows. And a lot of those things probably got me through the night, because I mean, if I wouldn't have had those, I definitely would have died of hypothermia. Cause I mean, it gets 20 degrees outside and you don't have proper gear, you're in trouble. So there was people like that all the time. There was people who would just, they'd pull up to you and they'd offer to go take you and get some breakfast with them. And they'd sit down and ask what your story is and how they can help, you know? And I wasn't ready at that time for help, but they were nice enough to be there and ask me what they, you know, what I needed help with. So I had a good amount of people like that.
To get to the point you're ready for help, was there anything, is it all internal? Or is it something that others could help accelerate or get you to? How, you know what I mean? How do you get to that point you're ready?
In my experience, it was all internal. And I hate to say that, because it makes it sound like there's no hope for anybody out there. There's definitely hope. But just in my own personal experience, it was until I decided that I was ready. Cause I did multiple 6-month rehabs, 90-day rehabs, you know, where people are like, hey, you know, I'll put you in this rehab. I would do the rehab, and the day I got out, I would be back to using.
Does it feel like a different life? Do you feel like the same person? You know what I mean? Like, that was probably hard to think of yourself like, okay, now this life is totally different than that. It's worlds apart.
Yeah, I equate it to being on another planet, because it absolutely is. And Stephanie, my wife, she'll say it all the time. We'll be driving and we'll see something, and I'll be able to tell exactly what they're doing just based on my past criminal activity. And she's like, you know, sometimes you just blow me away with the things you say, because like, I just don't expect it from you.
Because she doesn't have this past or this experience at all.
No, this is not her life at all. So it blows her mind. And it is, it's two totally different worlds. And I think I saw the ugliest side of life. Basically everything that you can imagine, I saw it. But then I also saw this side of life and how much better it is. So it makes me, what I think, in a better position than most people in the world, because I understand what both sides offer. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to basically say, okay, this is the side I want, and I know I don't want to go back. And it gives me an appreciation for everything that I do.
I bet it prevents you from judging people too.
Yes. Because it's, you never know what they're going through. There's always a backstory to every single person.
That's wild. Is there anything that, this might totally come out wrong, but you miss about the lifestyle, like not having a mortgage or anything? Is there anything like, you know,
yeah,
free coffee? I don't know.
and Steph and I have talked about it. I mean, I didn't have to, my entire 20s, I didn't have to be an adult. I didn't have to learn anything. I didn't have to do anything other than make money and do drugs. Whereas most people spend their 20s kind of figuring out their life, you know, looking for a house, looking for a car, paying for this, paying for that, exploring their career. I didn't do any of that. So it was very simplistic in that approach. Now, don't get me wrong. There was so many days where I was sick to the point where I could barely move, and I wanted to die because I felt that bad, and I knew I had to get up to keep the drugs flowing. So I don't miss any of that, but sometimes just the simplicity of it. It was just, I knew what I was doing every day. It's, I'm going to wake up, my eyes open, I'm going to look for money so I can get drugs.
That's crazy. Do you and Stephanie, like, are you like, hey, that's a really good bridge right there. That's a top notch bridge to sleep under.
That one's, if I slap some cardboard over it, that'd be looking good. No wind. Yeah, we're good. The penthouse of bridges.
Man, that is wild. You know, this is definitely going to be a unique story for us to talk about in the pod. Totally different.
And the sad thing is, and Steph and I talk about this all the time, is most people don't get the chance to tell their story. I'm one of the very fortunate people who has gotten off and stayed off for multiple years. Statistics tell you you're not going to be able to if you just go by statistics' sakes. So I'm very fortunate in that regard, you know, because most people, they don't make it out. So,
yeah. What would you say today is some of those most important factors? It sounds like community has been really important.
Yes.
Just others. What kind of community? Like, what are we talking about? It sounds like originally it was the sobriety focus, and then it evolved into fitness. Does that have a longer effect or longer influence? You know, like fitness is something you can focus on for the long term. Like, why has that worked?
I think the fitness community has really helped me. I mean, all three of my jobs are centered around fitness, and then everything I do is essentially centered around fitness. And my wife is also very big into fitness, and it's just been, that's been the driving force. I'm able to now, like, I think giving back is the essential thing that keeps me sober, and I'm in a position now to be able to do that. So I'm able to lead triathlon training programs. I'm able to lead running programs. I can give back with my photography at races, things like that, because everybody loves seeing themselves in a photo when they're running. So just little things like that. I think that's where I find my fulfillment.
Giving back. Is that a part that folks maybe don't consider sometimes?
100%. Yeah, you have to give back if you want to be able to stay in this life. Because all those people that gave to me when I first came in, and I'm not talking like when I first got sober, I'm not talking monetarily, but I'm talking, they gave their time, they gave their energy to make sure that I was okay. They were the deciding factor in me shaping my life. So now I can be that deciding factor in someone else's life to make that change.
You know, I had a coach in college that used to say that, you know, the fastest way to get over your problems is help somebody get over theirs. And
100%.
You're just, it puts things into perspective, one. And then more often than not, you're like, whoa, I've actually got it pretty good.
Somebody always has a bigger problem, that's for sure.
Well, what else did you, you know, want to maybe mention or maybe share that didn't make the film or you didn't get to even talk about during that time?
I feel like we talked about so much that literally we did like a 5-hour sit down interview, and not all that made the film, obviously. But I just feel like everything was pretty well driven into. Yeah.
That's, man, that's such a crazy trajectory, you know, like your life. I mean, do you ever sit back and think, what is all this really happening?
100%. There's a lot of days where I'm like, how in the world did I get here? And I know the answer. It's the people that I surrounded myself with. 100%. It's me having a willingness to change. Took a lot of years to get out of old habits and figure things out, but it's having that community around you that opens this door, they open that door, and then I just have to be willing to step through it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that you need to have a background in a rock bottom like yours to make a change, or do you think anybody can make a change at any time?
I think anybody can make a change at any time as long as it is just the right situation. Like, it's just, again, like I said, when I got sober, I had that group of people right there at that moment when I needed them. And I think that's what's important, is for that split second that somebody decides they want to change, somebody needs to be there for them to help them, because they can't do this alone. That is one thing I promise you. No one can go through sobriety alone. Guarantee it. But having support the moment that you need it, I think, is the very important thing.
Last question before we get into rapid fire is, where did hot dogs come from? Like, what's the story there?
So the hot dogs, oh man. So about 4 years ago, we hold this beer mile every year. And this was before I discovered Athletic Brewing. So the year before I discovered Athletic Brewing, I wanted to participate, but I didn't know how to participate because I didn't drink. So I was like, this is kind of weird. So I came up with the idea for chili cheese dogs. So I eat a full chili cheese dog every quarter mile and run a mile. Sounds great. No, it's terrible.
That sounds harder than the beer. It really does.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was awful. I was literally like gagging while I was trying to run and get this hot dog down.
And are you still dealing with that GI tract stuff at the top? Of
yeah, it's
this?
Probably oh where God. It's probably where it came from. So that day I think I changed my Instagram handle, just joking around leading up to the race. And I was like, all right, guys, I'm Timmy Hot Dog Howard, just kind of like hyping it up. And then everybody loved it. It stuck. So everybody started calling me that. And over the years, it has just literally morphed into my brand, which is kind of a weird thing. But it's just become something that's just fun. And so I kind of run with it.
Do you like hot dogs that much?
Oh, I love them. I love them. I'll eat them anytime. Yeah, anytime. Costco is my nemesis. Every time, them $1.50 dogs, they get me every time. So Steph and I, our wedding, we served everyone hot dogs. So. It's just kind of what we do.
That's a great hack. Save some money right there. It's like, hey.
It's very cheap.
It's my brand.
We got married outside in the woods and hot dogs. So it was good.
That sounds like my son's birthday party that's coming up.
Yes.
Woods and hot dogs, baby. That's hilarious.
I'll be there.
I love that. Well, how did you discover Athletic? Let me ask that too.
Oh, I discovered Athletic when I was filming another podcast. I had always been afraid to try it, because I thought it might be something that would send me back into drinking if I really liked the taste of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was filming this podcast about my sobriety and about my past. And the guy who was the podcast host was a good buddy of mine. And he's like, here, dude, I have it. Just try one. And we actually sat there and drank one while I was filming the podcast. And I was like, this is incredible. And I took it home to Steph, and she was really afraid. She was like, I don't know. Is this going to lead you back to what you were doing? But then we kind of, we just found out, like, okay, we can drink this and you can be at a party or you can be at a bar and nobody asks you, why aren't you drinking? Or, because that was a very uncomfortable question for me at first, like, why aren't you drinking? And then I have to dive into this whole big story. But it's just like, you have an Athletic in the hand, nobody says a second word. And then we found we could pair it with foods. And I think what really kind of kept me was, once I got into the ambassador program, was all the stories that were similar to mine and the community that was focused on this is, you can be better by drinking this. Like, not it makes you performance better, but just like your life can be a little bit better if you substitute this here, or, you know, things like that. And I think that's where we kind of fell in love with it. And I started passing it out to everybody. And it was amazing how many people were like, I didn't even know an option like this was available. You know, the norm is to go out and drink and socialize, but now we're figuring out you don't have to have that. And that was a really enlightening thing.
It's awesome, man. Like, you can be a part of it. You know, someone who's just wanting one less beer tonight can be a part of it. It's such a unifying thing. And I'm glad that, you know, folks like you are out there sharing the good news, you know, just letting folks know it's an option. That's all it is. You know, it's just like with how you got into sobriety and into community, just knowing like, wow, this is an option, or this community exists. It's just, that's all we're trying to get done. That's
absolutely
awesome. What's the podcast name, by the way? Can you shout that out or no?
Yeah, that is Hoosier Health Chats. That was probably 4 or 5 years ago, so that was a while. Absolutely.
So let's jump into some rapid fire. You don't have to answer one word questions, but, you know, a phrase or two, unless there's a story. If there's a story, you know, by all means, share the story.
All right.
Rapid
fire. I feel
like
I was born for this.
Yes. All right. What are you most curious about right now outside of your three jobs and outside of hot dogs? How about that?
It's called a Nord race or something like that. It's basically an Ironman that's in the freezing cold and through the mountains. I want to look into that.
Sounds like hell to me.
Yes.
Sleeping under a bridge sounds a little better than that. Not going to lie.
Yeah, that's fair. We'll cross that bridge when we get it.
That's hilarious. So what would you say your proudest achievement is? Let's say since getting through this and getting sober, like what has been one of your proudest achievements?
Definitely, without a doubt, my proudest achievement is Ironman Lake Placid. I put a lot of time and effort into that, so definitely my proudest.
Dude, that's awesome to hear. What a spectacular achievement too. Biggest goal not yet achieved. I know you've got a lot of things you'd like to do, but is there anything out there that's like, you know, maybe it's that Nord Ironman or that Nord triathlon you're talking about, but is there anything out there that's like, one day I want to do this?
I think my biggest thing is just helping more athletes. So coaching, that's my biggest goal, is just to help as many people transition to fitness as possible.
And so in that pursuit of that goal, what's a daily habit you stick to?
Conversations, talking to people, getting to know them and understand their why.
What is that usually through? Is that clients at the gym and folks coming in and your folks you're coaching, or is that just?
Yeah. That's gym interactions. That's social media. You know, if people find you on social media, that's talking to them on there. It's if you're out on a run and you run up beside somebody, it's talking to them while you're running, just meeting a new stranger. I think that's kind of where I try to fit it into daily life.
What's your number one icebreaker? Is like, do you like hot dogs?
It'll either get you slapped or it'll start a hell of a conversation.
Hey, you like hot dogs? I'm a coach. I'm a triathlon coach.
Yes. Oh my God.
So what hobby do you have? I mean, I don't even know if you have time for hobbies, but with everything going on, but do you have a hobby that maybe folks don't know about, or you're just getting into, or just a little secretive right now?
I like working on cars. That's kind of, or just tinkering with anything that I can take apart and try to put back together, but probably will never go back together. That's kind of my favorite thing to do. Yeah, my dad was a mechanic, so he raised me to kind of work on cars. So that was kind of what I enjoyed doing, and I still do it to this day. And new cars, though, so many electronics, I can't figure it out.
Dude, you sound like every mechanic I've ever known. Ah, these new cars. Yeah,
80s car, we're good.
So favorite, we talked a little bit about how you found athletic. Do you have a favorite athletic brew?
Yeah, so my favorites are some of the staples. The Run Wild is fantastic. Obviously, I think that's a lot of people's favorite. But I really love a good Lodge Life in the winter. March is my favorite month. So the Irish Red is big. You'll see me running around the city in my leprechaun outfit and passing out Irish Reds here in the next month. So that's kind of one of my favorite things.
I've got a little Irish in me, so I like that one. And exactly. Lodge Life is actually my favorite. Run Wild and Free Wave and Lodge Life, and that one I love. So that's funny. Great taste. It's
different on cold day.
Oh yeah. Oh gosh. I don't get those cold days like you do. So I imagine, like snowing outside, sitting by.
Oh, it's good.
Sitting in a warm house, just sipping on a Lodge Life with some hot soup or something, or some stew would be amazing.
Nothing better.
Nothing better. Well, it used to say on our cans, brew without compromise. And what we realized is to do anything, like make a non-alcoholic craft beer without compromise, you had to be people that wanted to live without compromise. You know, it's not like you can't do one thing with excellence. You got to kind of just do everything that way. How you do anything is how you do everything. And so we wanted to talk to people. This is why we have this show, to talk to people in our community who live without compromise. And you're one of those people. And so I want to know what it means to you to live without compromise.
Yeah, for me, it's to never dwell on the past, to learn from it, and to move forward and always use it to better myself. I think that's, for me, what it'd be to be without compromise.
Well, there you have it, folks. That is a little bit about Timmy Hot Dog Howard's story. You can learn more and watch the film. Go to athleticbrewing.com. That is linked in the show notes. Go watch the trailer. Buy a ticket to one of our screenings. And if you want to host a screening, please reach out. All right. Hope to see you on the road.